Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. How did I
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Come get some.
Beware, I live.
IGN Gamescoop.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN Gamescoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week, Justin Davis,
Scoop.
Jared Petty,
Scoop.
Brian Altano. We got a great show for you this week.
Gross show.
A real gross show.
We got some Mad Bolts, we got the Spline Pit, Garbage Pail Kids, we got it all going on.
Somebody's getting oozed.
Hopefully, yeah, no one says, I don't know. Only 80s kids will understand that one. Great show for this week. We got to talk about Titanfall 2. Talk a little bit more about Battlefront, but first, some housekeeping notes. Next weekend is PAX East in Boston. IGN will be there in full force, and there are several opportunities you have to come and hang out with us. First of all, we're hosting a PAX East kickoff party on Wednesday, the 21st.
Ooh.
This is at a venue called Candy Bar, which sounds like a strip club. I cannot confirm or deny whether or not it is a strip club.
What about a delicious snack?
Yeah. It's in the Intercapped. Candy Bar is Intercapped. Mm-hmm. This is a 21 and over event. There'll be gaming stations, a photo booth, prizes for the first 300 guests, and I'm told tons of surprises.
Sounding more and more like a strip club,
yeah,
you're right.
It's actually true. You can sign up at
IGN. Is it buffet?
Great buffet. Sign up at IGN Presents Battleborn Community.splashthat.com.
What?
What? Yep.
It's a long site. Once again, IGN Presents Battleborn Community.splashthat.com.
So just all IGN Presents Battleborn Community. Just all one.
That's big just
thing.
One big thing you put type into your box.
Dot yep. splashthat.com.
Dot splash that.
Yep. Okay. That's the thing.
And splash what?
That.
Got it.
And you don't need a badge for that event. Then the IGN panel is 7 p.m. on Saturday in the Dragonfly Theater. You do need a badge for that, but that's an all-ages event. And then that's immediately followed by the IGN meet and greet at a venue called Royale.
Mm. Ooh.
That's happening from 10 to midnight. To sign up for that, you go to IGN meet and greet presented by 2K.splashthat.com.
So is that the letter N?
IGN
or
meet
IN?
Letter N greet. Presented by 2K.splashthat.com.
We are running out of URLs.
I did not set up these URLs. This is just how you can be a part of these.
This
events.
Is what happens on the internet. We've had too many URLs. There's none left. This
They're
is
like the phone numbers.
Yeah.
It's true. All right. Let's get to this week's topics. Titanfall 2.
Mm-hmm. It's happening. It's real.
Yep. We got the announcement of the announcement.
Sequel to that Don Bluth movie.
We also got mech swords confirmed.
Confirmed mech swords.
Okay.
Yes. Titanfall 2 will be revealed on June 12th. That happens to be E3 week. It's the Sunday of E3 week, which Sunday is now part of E3.
It's I forget their name of it, but EA is having an event.
EA Play.
EA Play. They're like pre E3 sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's when they're having their conference on Sunday. And then they have an event in LA that's going to be open to the public.
Okay.
So that's when we can expect Titanfall 2 to be officially revealed.
Titanfall, I was surprised to learn that it sold 10 million copies.
Did it
That's
really?
True?
I don't know how many of those were, discounted down to $10 or whatever, but
There was a bundle.
And there was a bundle.
I'm sure a lot of people bought their Xbox One.
But over a long enough period of time, that game got into a lot of people's hands, and Titanfall was really good.
It was good?
Yeah, the free running, so it's like the devil's in the details, right? Like, it had free running and all sort of a lot of the stuff that Call of Duty does, but it did that stuff better. Like, I think it felt better and fluid and the whole thing just felt fantastic. It was really, really polished and great, but it was that lack of a single player campaign.
Yeah, so it was it was very well executed, but limited in scope, and it was only on Xbox and PC.
Yeah.
So now with Titanfall 2, they've already said they're gonna add a single player campaign, and if they haven't officially said this, we know it's coming to PlayStation as well. So, it sounds like It sounds like they're just like fixing the checkboxes of complaints people have with the first one.
Just generally what you want with a sequel to a pretty good game that had a few shortcomings. That's exciting. I don't care much about the single player element, but I do like the other fine-tunes.
See, I'm the opposite.
Yeah,
I want to play a nice single player campaign.
No, well, I want to play one. Blast noobs.
I want to play one or the other. That's what I mean. Either if it's a multiplayer focused game, if they do great multiplayer, that's fine by me. If it's single player focused game and they do great single player and there's no multiplayer, that's also fine. I prefer that. If you think you can do one thing well and the other one you ignore, I'm great with that. If it has both, sure. But a game could be a fine single-player experience with no multiplayer elements, and you can have a fine multiplayer with no single-player, as long as it's that well put.
You know what's one of the exceptions? I actually really liked Uncharted multiplayer.
That's true.
I'm a big fan of that.
The Last of Us multiplayer was neat, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. It was cool.
I've been giving this some thought, Damon.
Okay, lay it on us.
So I think everyone
already... Take us to church.
Everyone knows the stats about, you know, no one spends any time in the Call of Duty single player. You know, they spend 5 or 6 hours there, then 500 hours in the multiplayer, and yet it's a huge portion of their time and energy and budget, and they have to hire Kevin Spacey and, you know, everything else. But in the case of Titanfall, I think the mistake, or the thing they didn't account for, is that without having that single player, you don't have any context for who you are, who you're shooting. Mm-hmm. I don't know who I am. I don't know where I am.
Right.
I don't know who that is or why I'm shooting them or what's at stake or what's going on or like why there's mechs. And so at least when you're introducing a new IP like that, to not have a new brand, new world, new universe, to not do a better job of setting up, you know, the stakes and the conflict and like orient people in this world. Even if they only spend 5 or 6 hours in that single player, there's value, like that value carries over into the multiplayer to sort of be like, okay, I get it, sure. I know what I'm doing.
So that's interesting. So you need context you're playing the game more than just the mechanics of the game.
I don't think that I need it. It's just I think it made the multiplayer like less sticky. Like in Battlefront, it's like, you know, you're the rebels or you're the
Empire. Right. Empire, the conflict like, is inherently set up by the story of the franchise.
Mm-hmm. So I think I do think that was part of the missing. Like that's the missing piece of the puzzle there. Even though the multiplayer itself, I get that they were a startup game developer, crazy expensive to make single player, and. You know, I understand why they made the decision they did, but I think that's why it turned out to be.
Well, they did try to shoehorn story into just a weird way to tell a story, right? It was like these like preloading, not cutscenes, but basically just like loading screens right before a multiplayer match started. That was just like the blah 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 had the blah 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 stop the blah blah, and it was like, this is not really like I'd actually rather not have any of that than just sort of like get
they
a Cliff Notes version.
They did a dropship voiceover. That was like, okay, we're on this planet, do this, and it's like, what? I don't know. This makes any sense.
No, I think in multiplayer context, if you're not going to have that single-player storytelling, just go ahead, drop it in, and make it kind of Doom or Quake style. There's bad dudes. Shoot them with guns. You know, that's enough. That's really enough for a multiplayer shooter.
They tried to have their cake and eat it, too, where like Team Fortress did that for a long time, although the irony is that that game actually does have a lot of deep lore and story now that they added on after the fact. But, you know, Team Fortress or Quake or Doom, you don't need a story, you don't need anything, we're just shooting each other. But Titanfall tried to set up this future world with these two factions that had like acronyms that you didn't know what they meant, and I just think that was probably a mistake. Hmm.
So there's been a glut of multiplayer-only games this generation. Evolve, Battlefront.
Yep.
Rainbow Six Siege. Mm-hmm. If Titanfall 2 adds a single-player campaign, does that start a chain reaction? Do the second iterations of all these games also add single-player campaigns?
Yeah, I mean,
is that an admission of what Guild, for lack of a better term?
I would hope so. Like you said, I'm a lot like you in that way, where it's very very rare where like a multiplayer-only game will really grab me. Like I'm a turned off the lights, put on the surround sound headphones, and play a single player game. Mm-hmm. Like I love getting lost in a story, getting to play something at my own pace. Like I'm playing Battlefront now, and the new Jabba's Palace map came out, and I want to walk around and geek out about how cool it is. And my teammates are getting killed, and I'm not helping them because I'm like, ooh, I found a Grimorian guard behind a gate, and I can't do that. And there's no single player mode where I can be like, oh look, it's the Rancor. Like, so I kind of want that. I like being able to play stuff at my own pace. But like you said, Justin, they're incredibly expensive, and if most people gloss over them, it's hard to justify. But it became such a sticking point for Battlefront, where people were like, why doesn't this have this? Why doesn't it have this? And I think it's because the old versions had somewhat of a story mode to an extent. Titanfall, I think, like, the expectation with first-person shooters is that you don't really have to make more than a 4-hour, 5-hour long campaign. Mm-hmm. Even that is enough, and give us a couple different difficulty settings and platinum trophies and stuff like that, and that'll be enough to get people going. So that I would like to see. I mean, I don't think anyone's really asking for like a 15-hour game here, But if there's a four-hour story mode for Titanfall and there's a justification for why I'm battling giant robots, aside from the fact that it's just cool, that's pretty awesome.
Go ahead.
Titanfall had more. They actually added a horde mode and added some of these modes and features post-launch. But at launch, no single player was a shorthand for, that game was really short on content and modes in general.
Right.
Not that many maps, not that many modes. This game was crazy fun and polished, but there weren't a lot of ways to experience it. Mm-hmm. And, you contrast that with something like Call of Duty that's also $60. Call of Duty Zombies is so, it has a separate character progression system, mm-hmm. separate weapons, separate story. It's
separate art style.
And I don't think we're this far away from this happening, but for now it remains within the core Call of Duty package. I think it'll eventually be its own thing. That was a $60 game inside the game that mm-hmm. you launched from, a whole separate main menu.
Yeah.
And it also had hardcore modes and just that wealth of content that you get even outside of the short campaign. Titanfall was just missing some of that. So, give us more ways to experience, sort of the rad gameplay systems.
I would like to see the closest they can get to a more complete package from the jump. One of the Titanfall's biggest problems was the way it split up its user base by putting out map packs and DLC and things like that. That all of a sudden some people were playing and some people weren't. And Battlefront's kind of had that problem a little bit where they give early access to season pass people. But once that gets unlocked for everybody, everybody's in. I know they did that with the Battle of Jakku and it was hard to find matchmaking. And if you want to maintain that balance of creating a game that's popular for a long time, mm-hmm. But also services the most hardcore users, but also doesn't alienate the people who just kind of want to casually check it out. So that, on top of nailing the single player, is that's their big asks right now. That's the big things they have to get over.
Well, Titanfall 2 set for a big reveal on June 12th. EA's E3 lineup begins to take shape. They'll have Titanfall 2, they'll have Mass Effect Andromeda, mm-hmm. they'll have FIFA 17, that's mm-hmm. been confirmed.
Yep.
Presumably there'll be more Battlefront stuff that they'll want to reveal.
Yeah, they just revealed today Lando Calrissian and Dengar are coming.
Exactly.
Everyone's been clamoring for that Dengar.
Oh my gosh, yeah, Dengar's great. He's like a running joke in the Star Wars galaxy to see them cater to that.
He's a toilet paper mummy.
Every now and then, pandering is a good thing, and this is a case of pandering just being wonderful.
Yeah. We won't know this for a while, but I hope he shows up. Bossk's gun is in the game, so I think they'll do all the bounty hunters. But it's really cool that they've announced that Cloud City stuff's coming, mm-hmm. then Death Star, but the fourth expansion pack is unknown right now. But a lot of rumors are saying it'll lean into Rogue One, because Rogue One is basically right before the original trilogy. They're only doing original trilogy stuff, and we don't know what the fourth map pack
is. Right, Jakku is an exception.
Yeah.
People keep asking for, I want this, I want that, and I don't think a lot of people understand that Battlefront really is focused on that OG trilogy, and it feels like they can probably sneak Rogue One in there.
Yeah, I think they can throw in a Yavin base or something
Maybe they'll do that BART station from the trailer.
With the robot running around?
Yeah, totally.
Can't wait for that movie.
They'll probably also want to show off the VR version, the PlayStation VR version.
The experience.
Of Battlefront.
Shiny. Yeah. I'm guessing it's just speeder bikes, which I'm okay with.
That'd be fun.
That'd be great.
And then it's been a while since we heard from Battlefield. Mm-hmm. What do they do for Battlefield 5? What they would presumably be the next one?
Yeah, I was wondering if they were getting into that sort of Call of Duty thing where they would have on and off years now with Battlefront or whatever they want to do in
or Hardline or something like that.
Stuff like that. So
I feel smart, alternate Battlefield and Battlefront. It's a good solution to me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They tried that with Medal of Honor and that didn't work.
Yeah. I don't know how wise they would be to go head to head with Call of Duty with something like that again. I think Battlefront was just different enough that people. I mean, it's Star Wars.
Yeah, that doesn't hurt at all.
I mean, Call of Duty has been showing some weakness though. They bounced back this year with Black Ops 3, but they stopped breaking their own records a couple years back with Ghosts, and it's been a little bit shaky. But the rumors about the next one sound pretty cool. So.
Yeah, but this is also is EA going to put out a game like that and then also have Titanfall? And more Battlefront content.
That's a good point.
They're juggling three first-person shooters at the same time.
I don't think Titanfall is confirmed for this fall. I think that might be February, March.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we don't know. That's my guess.
Yeah.
Early 2017.
Because from what we read about Call of Duty, it's going so futuristic. Mm-hmm. Those are the rumors.
Far future.
Yeah.
Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is I mean, that's going to be really cool. If there's a Star Wars shooter, there's a mech shooter, and then there's future Call of Duty. If Battlefield comes out and it's just a regular military shooter, then it's once again on its own.
I love that. I love the idea of them embracing that hamminess. I mean, Ghost was just so up its own butt to see them finally just be like, we're in the. Yeah. This is nice.
And I guess I should correct myself. Battlestar Galactica takes place in the distant past, doesn't it?
That's a good point.
Spoilers, sorry.
Yeah,
you should have watched it by now.
It happened already?
Oh, man. All of this has happened before.
And all of it will happen again. Yeah,
like Star Wars.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. In the subject of statistics that prove what we already know, a recent Nielsen study finds that most hardcore gamers, traditional gamers, console gamers, play mobile games. To the tune of 66% of people who identify as hardcore gamers also play mobile games. However, they don't spend a dime on mobile games. 83% of those don't spend any money.
Oh, but that actually means that 17% do spend, which is higher than the average.
It's like the whole whale concept, right?
A small percentage
of your audience is...
But that's a bigger small percentage.
Mobile games work is 95 to 97% of people never spend anything, and that 5% of players that are willing to transact subsidize everybody else. I mean, this isn't surprising at all. We see this in the IGN comments. When I used to run the mobile channel at IGN, the comments would always be, F mobile games, these are crap. Except for these three that I play.
Yeah, sure,
I play Plants vs. Zombies, and when I'm on the bus, sometimes I'll play Angry Birds, and I really like this war game that I play with my friends, and I'll check out these games, but besides those, mobile.
I wonder how many of these guys are going out and buying the ones that just let you buy the game for one price, one
this is
time.
Why I wanted,
Apple's really leaned into that.
This is why I
love that, by the way.
Yeah.
I want to bring this up. If most gamers are playing mobile games, but they're not spending money on them, that means they're not playing the best mobile games. Because the best mobile games just cost a fixed upfront price, like Lara Croft Go, Monument Valley,
FTL.
That's really interesting because these self-proclaimed hardcore gamers,
but they're just playing the crappiest, crap garbage.
One of my things that I like, and I've noticed this 100 times, and I feel like I've talked about this before, but when I'm getting on a flight and I walk past first class, and there's somebody on the newest iPad, and they're playing a mobile game that has ads on it because they didn't pay the dollar to get rid of them. Yeah. I'm like, reevaluate your life. get it together. You're sitting in a sky chair that costs thousands of dollars on a $1,000 tablet that's I can't even think about affording it right now. And you're like, I'm not going to spend a dollar to get rid of ads in this game. It's so ridiculous.
That's my mom, except for flying in first class.
Yeah.
But she plays this game. I guess I got a name drop. She plays Fairway Solitaire, and I swear to God, she's played that game for hundreds of hours. She plays it every day. And there's a free version that's kind of gimped and crappy, or the full game is, I think, $3. And this is a couple years ago, so I don't know if they've changed their business model since then. And I'm like, Mom, you play this game literally every evening. Spend the $3 and you'll get... She's like, no, I don't mind. I just do the same courses over and over. It's $3
on
your
$600
iPad.
It's so bizarre to me.
Like a pack of gum.
I mean, as gamers, we are so weird, and we have selective reasoning when it comes to picking and choosing where we spend our money. I went out for lunch in San Francisco today. I got a sandwich and a peach tea that Batman vs Superman has ruined for me because it looked like piss. And it was $12.75, and that's kind of a steal in downtown San Francisco.
Absolutely.
But then I get back to my desk, and I read this some tweet from somebody who spent $17 in Miitomo today to try to get the cat costume, and I'm like, that's ridiculous. And I'm gonna go poop out my sandwich and my grandma's piss tea, and I'm not even gonna think about it. But I looked at that situation, and I'm like, why did you spend so much money in that game when you could have just waited around and maybe bought a costume with a couple of coins or whatever. Yeah. But then I'll go out and buy a $10 beer or something like that. Yeah. I bought a Star Wars toy for $25. It just sits on my desk and falls over, and I turn it. Where does this stop?
The part that bugs me is the bing ooh. Sometimes it reminds me. I used to go by pachinko parlors in Japan and watch people just plop the coins in and pop the coins
in.
Or go to a casino, see
big
the same
pachinko
thing.
Those are the scariest places in the universe, by the way.
Oh, some of them are rad.
Have you been in a pachinko?
I've actually never been inside one.
Very loud, very bright. I literally got sick from. I walked into one, it was 3 stories, it was screaming loud.
Yeah.
It sounded like Transformers. And everyone's chain smoking, and everyone's drinking, and everyone's screaming, and there's no air. And it's just like, Aah! And I walked out, and I'm like, I'm sick, I have a cold, I have a flu.
go to Echo Pachin. You go in there, they won't let you smoke inside.
Okay.
It's completely different.
Good.
Yeah, I really do think that I get nervous about the closeness to gambling, and I don't think gambling is inherently unethical in any way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I do think that there's a certain part of the population that's susceptible to being victimized. And I do worry that some of these flashing lights and cha-ching sounds on apps where you can pour more and more money in that I know are aimed at a small fraction of the population kind of resemble?
No, I mean, you don't even need to kind of, you don't need to hedge. If you look at the top grossing games, they're all slot machine apps.
Yeah.
Like, there's no kind of about it. Like, okay. They, you can buy, you know, they'll give you 10,000 free coins a day to gamble with, but if you want more, you can spend a buck, and then those shoot up to, and those games make $100,000 a day for giving out nothing.
I remember growing up and going to arcades at birthday parties and stuff like that. You know, as an 80s kid, like, that was a big part of video game culture, because you got to play stuff that looked better than the stuff you had at home.
Yeah.
And there were, like, you know, Ninja Turtles, and there was X-Men, and Simpsons, they're all fun multiplayer game. And basically, the better you were, and the more quarters you put in, the closer you got to getting an ending.
Yeah.
And then right next to it were these games that were like those big towers of just tokens.
Yeah.
And you would put a token in, and it would just push a shelf into more tokens.
Yeah.
It would push another shelf. And eventually, like, a couple tokens would fall down, and then you'd get some tickets. And it was like, this feels like a racket.
Yeah.
But people paid. And, like, I mean, that's your...
Yeah, but it depends on, like, this claw machines. I mean, it depends on what your tolerance level is for
this sort of thing.
Mobile games have definitely... This has been lurking beneath the surface. It's really come to the forefront in 2015, 2016. The sort of gacha games where you spend a dollar, and then you're going to get a character. You're going to get a new character for your team or squad, but you have a 2% chance of getting the ultra-rare character.
Yeah.
You know, a 5% chance of getting a rare character. Otherwise, you're getting a common character. And, like... Okay, you save up your money, they drip you a little bit of money, so once a month you can maybe try to get one without spending any cash. And, like, that's literally gambling, which is illegal on the App Store because it crosses state lines, and, like, they're very much sort of skirting beneath the law. Like,
yeah,
I think it's not illegal because the stuff doesn't have any monetary value. Like, you can't turn them into cash or anything like that,
right.
But, like, a reckoning is coming, and it's coming in Japan, too, where they have special events where... Hey, you normally have a 3% chance of getting an ultra rare character, but, you know, for these 2 days, we're going to up it to 6% or 10%. And then people got together and ran the numbers, or a guy bought like $1,000 worth of stuff, and it turned out they were lying. Like, they hadn't...
They hadn't increased your chances?
No, well, they hadn't increased them to the degree that they said they did.
Ooh.
And so now, because of that, like, this industry might be a little bit more regulated in Japan than it has been. Because you're really at the mercy of... Like, so they doubled the odds, and you try 10 times, and you don't get anybody, and you're like, did I just have bad luck?
Yeah.
Like, you're just really at their mercy that they're telling you the truth.
They ultimately have a link to your credit card. It's not tokens in a machine. It's a lot of money. It's your, you know, your net resources are available, and if you're willing to make the wrong decision at the wrong time, you could spend an awful lot of money in a very short period, and there's no accountability.
When you read those stories about, like, somebody's kid who spent $3,000 on Smurf berries, like, that's never happened in an arcade. It's impossible.
Yeah.
You know, no one's ever brought in their dad's credit card and swiped it and gotten $3,000 worth of tokens and walked out with this, like, Santa Claus sack of fake coins.
Although I love the idea that happened.
That would be great. And started dumping him into a
sack
machine.
Has a big dollar.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Hi, listeners.
What's up, listeners?
What's up, listeners?
What's up, every listener? Our first email this week comes from Vernon. I'm going to choose to believe it's Vernon Reed, guitar player for Living Color.
Oh, okay.
Really? Yeah.
Okay. What about Vernon Troy?
That's what I was going to say, Vern Troyer.
From Austin Powers.
The little man? What are you? I'm sorry.
I actually don't know the technical term for him, because he's not...
Technical.
Technical, yeah.
Vernon emailed us at the email address gamescoop@IGN.com, just like
small.
You can.
Yeah.
Vernon says, even though I am not Big Tony style, I hope you will give some consideration to my question. I, for one, am looking forward to buying Dark Souls 3 on its release date, one, because it looks like a great game, and two, I'm excited to experience it at a time when the number of people playing it is at its maximum.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When people talk about the value of games, one of the considerations that I do not hear mentioned much outside of multiplayer-only games is the value of playing something when there is a large, active community surrounding it, both those who are playing it and also those talking about it online in discussion groups, YouTube, etc. Sometimes when I play a game, even if it's just a few years old, I feel like a man on an island. Does that desire to play something at the height of its popularity factor into whether or not you all buy a game at full price when it is new, or am I just a sucker spending my hard-earned cash just for the sake of not feeling left out? You guys are the best. Thanks for all hours of entertainment.
So, I mean, this is a completely biased question for us specifically, because we have to be part of the conversation as
well,
it's happening.
It's part of our job.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
But take off your... gaming media spectacles.
Well,
and just think of yourself as just when you're just a gamer, like you still feel the need, like, oh, I gotta play the hottest game right now.
The first thing I would
talk about it. It's just like, God, I know Batman v Superman is going to be bad, but I want to be part of the conversation, so let's go see it.
Totally, yeah. Where you want to see it because it's part of the zeitgeist, right? Yeah.
I skipped it.
You skipped it?
Yep, me too.
You're missing out.
Interesting.
You're both missing out.
That's the funniest movie of the year. I think I totally understand it. Like, it's different because, like, video games are incredibly expensive compared to seeing a movie for $10 or $8 or $5 matinee or whatever. Yep. Like, it's $60 to play Dark Souls. You could rent it from, one of those things in the supermarket or whatever.
Redbox.
Gamefly,
yeah.
Gamefly.
But even then, like, you're going to spend a couple bucks and you're going to take it back and bring it back in. I think there's something cool to be like, I see all these Facebook communities popping up, like the Podcast Beyond just launched one for this game, and people are fighting bosses at the same time and giving each other tips.
Yeah.
There's something really cool about that. That being said, there's also something really cool about coming back 6 months later and seeing an entire wiki filled out and just being like, anything I could possibly need is already here.
We were playing The Witness early before it came out, and like we got stuck, and like that was it. There was no there was no option. So like that's something when you have our job. But no, I mean, Vernon, I would say first of all, you're not a sucker at all because you said yourself that you get enjoyment out of it.
That's true. Yeah.
Like so, you're spending $60 now, and like versus $30, you know, whenever in 6 months or 12 months, and you have to decide like, is it worth $30 to me to be able to go on a really, really active subreddit or in NeoGAF topic or see all the IGN news posts about something, and be right in the thick of it?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I totally think that that's probably worth $30, but that's that's something that you can determine for yourself.
I do generally recommend that you wait around at least for the reviews. They usually come out around the same time, and I'm a big fan of letting professional reviewers tell me about a game before I go spend a lot of money on it. I don't necessarily let them tell me whether or not I'm going to buy it, but their opinions matter. And read the review. Just look at the score, read the review, see if this is a game like, oh, based on what they said, based on this person.
What about just scrolling down to the pros and cons and just reading those?
And just looking at the score.
Don't do that. Okay. Please, ever. Okay. No, please.
That's not really what he's not really asking about, like, should he wait for reviews?
No, but I say, so wait for the review. Even if you want to be part of the conversation, even if the pre-order, you want to be there opening night when everybody else is jumping it, please wait to read the review, then go buy the game. If there's a tiny pre-order bonus, you'll miss out on that, but the odds are that you're going to be more confident in the decision you made at that.
What I will say, one of the things that bothers me about kids these days, these younger gamers, is that they think they can be part of the conversation. Some of them think they can be part of the conversation if they've just like watched some Let's Plays on YouTube. Even if they haven't played the game, like, get out of here with that.
Yeah.
You haven't played the game, you aren't part of the conversation.
I'm on Vernon's side on this one. That's actually why I love Reddit a lot as a platform, because my Reddit looks different than probably anyone else's Reddit because I've customized it and tailored it. And you can subscribe to specific subreddits and unsubscribe from others, and you only see the stuff that you choose to see. So it's literally like a feed of like what Justin's into. Like, when I was playing a lot of Diablo 3, I'm like, subscribe to this, 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 and this. And then when I was like, I'm kind of over that game, they're gone. Like, they just disappeared. And so for a while, it was The Witness, and I was really into that and like reading all up on that community. And like, so it's like The Witness and board games and all the stuff that I'm into.
Brian mentioned Discovery earlier. On my Twitter feed, similar to your Reddit thing, looks, the night that Dark Souls 3 came out, it was just people with screenshots of countdowns and, stories of triumph until late into the night.
Right.
But then moving on into that process of discovery, yes, it's fun to go back when everything's discovered or when most things are, but it's also fun to watch them as they're being discovered over that first few days. Brennan was just showing me that they found the Solaris armor in a Dark Souls 3 and how to get it. It's like, that's really cool, and it's just emerging right now.
So I do think like spoiler culture plays into it as well. Yeah. Like, there is that sort of necessity to see something. Like with Force Awakens, I went into media blackout for 4 days before. I don't mean media blackout. I mean, I went into internet blackout.
You blacked out.
Like I hit myself with a large cinder block until I couldn't see. I froze myself. I think that's a big part of it now. Like, we mentioned one of the bosses on one of the I think it was on Beyond the other day, and I'm sure someone's going to be upset that we did that, even though we just made a vague reference to what a character looked like.
Oh,
because that's like, you can be scrolling through Twitter and be like, oh, it's the main boss of Dark Souls 3. Oops. Like, so I think part of it now, too, is sort of like, I have to see something before it's ruined for me. Mm-hmm. There's also sort of spikes that happen not because of release dates originally, but because of stuff that happens later on. Steam sales, PlayStation Plus, games with gold. These are kind of big movements to get entire armies of people playing something for the first time. Sometimes like a month or even a year after it's out. Somebody put together that video of sad Ben Affleck the other day. And they use that song "Hello Darkness, My Old Friend." Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And did you guys see it? Like, it cracked the like the top 10 on the on the Billboard charts.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Sounds of Silence.
That song, yeah, yeah, that song that's like 50 yeah. years old.
That's a great
yeah.
song.
Yeah, so but it's like.
And to be fair, it's not that hard to like a certain show that you and I are part yeah. of tops the Billboard charts somehow.
Totally.
You don't really need to sell yeah. that many copies these days to
yeah,
be
yeah,
on
yeah.
Billboard.
Yeah. But I think it's kind of interesting that like sometimes, and I remember like PewDiePie did a Let's Play of like I think it was like Skate 2 or something like that.
Yeah.
And it like spiked in European sales. Like,
I mean, he made Flappy Bird too. But
yeah, yeah. I mean, exactly. So I think there's like there are things that happen that are movements outside of just the original launch day,
mm-hmm.
Where you can be part of like a big sweeping conversation again. It doesn't necessarily have to happen in that first window. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think spoilers yeah. become a big part of it, and like subreddits and message boards and all that kind of stuff. It's a big conversation.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was going to say, I also understand that hunger to be, it's like, guys, I'm watching season 2 of Lost. I really don't know if he's going to push that button or not. And people are like no one wants to talk to you about it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, if you're onto something late, like, I watched True Detective, like, a year late. And I'm like, oh, my God, mm-hmm. I want to talk to this about somebody. And Goldfarb's like, dude, I told you a year ago to watch that show.
Yeah.
Like, but,
yeah.
and then it was too late. Like, I missed the window.
But on the other yeah. hand, you do get the time travel aspect from that. I mean, and that, playing it early doesn't mutually exclude you from going back. I do recommend you go back. There's a thing where you can look up at the night sky and look at the stars and you're seeing them, you know, from thousands to millions of years ago because it takes the light that long to get here. You're actually traveling through time
old
when you do that.
Spoilers.
Really cool.
Yeah, we're traveling through time right now.
Yeah, you know what I mean. We're traveling through time in a way unconventional,
sure.
A different way. With games and really media in general, you can do the same thing. And I think that's a really neat way. Going back and looking at something with a few years of context under your belt, with seeing what came from it since, and then go back and re-experiencing, sometimes it takes away. Sometimes it makes you aware of just how influential and brilliant something was when you didn't realize it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wow, this really changed something. Or, man, this holds up. And that's a beautiful feeling.
Turns out Otogi on the original Xbox started everything. That's the one. If you just went back and gave it a shot, you'd see.
Mm-hmm. Otogi?
Yeah.
That's the beginning of all?
I mean, the reality is you could save thousands of dollars a year by not being there on day one.
It's I wanted to do the math on, like, what if you time shifted 12 months?
Yeah.
Like, I've thought about this as a feature.
If you just waited for like
time.
The game of the year edition, that's like
yeah.
$40.
Oh, yeah.
Or whatever. Like, you know, like, what came out 12 months ago this month? Or we're almost 12 months from Batman Arkham City. And what does that game cost mm-hmm. now? $20? You know? Like,
I mean,
how
we
much
were talking
money
about Battlefront. Gamefly was having a sale on it yesterday for $19.95.
Yeah.
It's like,
how much money would you save by just time shifting all your media by a year?
I am a cheapskate, and I do that a lot even working here.
Sure.
I just wait because money's valuable, and 60 bucks and 20 bucks, that's a big difference.
Yeah, see, I do. I buy the game for 60 bucks and just don't play it. That's
yeah.
what I do.
Yeah. Good call.
I've had a, I don't know if we need to move on. I had an idea. I've had an idea for a startup for a company for a long time, or maybe a service on IGN. I don't know.
Is this Playdia again?
No, it's not. That was a, what was that called?
Oh, that was the
gamer social network thing.
Yeah, well, Playdia. That was your gamer friend.
It was at a different name than that. I don't remember what it was.
I thought it was Playdia.
Anyway, this was like people do like book clubs. I want it to be an online book club. Like, hey, everybody, let's agree to rewatch Lost, but we're going to agree to watch it at this pace, and we're going to start on this date. And then, like, let's say you're going to start a month from now, you know, mm-hmm. on May 1st, we're going to start rewatching Lost, and you know, you'll get a certain number of people, 10 or 50 or 100 people, that are like, yeah, let's do it. Either watch something for the first time or rewatch something, you know, and then you can come back and share and discuss and sort of travel through it. And so people would like make, it's almost like a message board. Like you would make, here's what we're going to watch and here's like the time horizon that we're going to watch it on.
Okay.
It's friendly to newcomers. It's friendly to people that are rewatching. And then if you're looking like, I've never watched The West Wing, I would find some West Wing group that was about to start and like enjoy the show with them.
The problem is because
people would be dicks.
Yeah, human beings are inherently chaotic, terrible monsters.
Yeah,
people would show up and spoil every episode. And
but maybe you have like a reputation system or something that like, you know, people can be muted or whatever.
I like that. I like that.
Big old
I mean, that's why I do like stuff like PlayStation Plus, because it gives people an opportunity to play, to have a conversation about something at the same time outside of the release date. But games are weird because they push back on you. Like games...
Or they go offline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I can sit and watch The West Wing and turn it on, and it's going... The only thing that will happen is I'll probably fall asleep. But when I try to play a video game, like, I'm going to die a bunch, and I might get frustrated, and you might be on the next level when I'm still on the last one.
Stuck in one place. Yeah, that does happen.
All right, moving on. Next email is from Edward Gosling. Ryan's lesser-known brother. Maybe this is Ryan Gosling's dad, Ed.
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah, sure.
That's who it
Uncle?
Is. He says, hi, Game Scoopers. New listener, first-time emailer.
Ooh.
My suggestion for a topic is the underappreciation for the sports game genre.
Ah.
I've been a longtime player of sports games on consoles since I started playing games, from the standard FIFA football games to Madden, NHL, and NBA Sims, not to mention Wii Sports. To my point, a lot of these titles sell extremely well and have a huge audience, as well as tremendous replay and multiplayer value, and are great for bringing non-gamers into the gaming world. Their ability to simulate the real-life sport is constantly improving, but I feel like they are looked down on by critics and hardcore gamers in general, despite their success. Do you think the sports genre deserves more respect?
Yes, I do. I think that it's respected in the marketplace, and I think critics have, I don't think that they are anti-sport game.
Yeah, but I think they review incredibly well.
Yeah, but I do think that the people that I work with, speaking in very broad terms, are not broad sports game players. There are people that may focus on one particular sport that happens to coincide with the sport they follow in real life, but a lot of us don't spend a lot of time on sports games. We know experts who do, we hire those experts, we work with those experts, and there are some people in-house that enjoy those things.
Yeah.
But there aren't as many as there are for what we might call that AAA center of the conversation in fantasy, science fiction, and role-playing games. I think that those worlds really do resonate a little better with the people who work in this part of the industry. So yes, I do think that they are probably given a different kind of attention, not because we're some kind of snoots or snobs, but because
I think it's more because sports games have centered so squarely on simulation in the last 10, 15 years. Yeah. And I don't play video games for realistic realizations of things that I can kind of do or experience in real life.
I like that Mario Baseball, though.
Yeah, like stuff like that's really great. Like, actually, one of my favorite games of all time is Blades of Steel. Because it's just really fun, and like when you get into fight mini games, it's like Street Fighter. I loved Wayne Gretzky's 3D hockey on the N64 because it's just goofy. Like hockey in general to me feels more like video gamey because it's a giant level with two mini bosses on the top and bottom that are guarding the flagpoles.
If they're the mini bosses, who's the main boss?
Yeah,
I never thought of that.
Who's the hockey?
The Stanley Cup.
I think you raise a great point. The things like Tecmo Super Bowl or Mike Tyson's Punch Out, which is effectively a rhythm game.
Yeah,
puzzle game.
Disguised
puzzle
as a boxing game, or a puzzle game disguised as a boxing game, or Mutant League Football, or a number of other base wars,
Blood Bowl.
But again, we're all
or
talking
NFL
about
Blitz
neat takes. We're talking about things you can't do in real life and changing them. And I do think that one of the reasons that sports is not as popular, maybe in this office and some others, is because it is not viewed as an escapist thing. You mentioned simulation. Yeah. We are largely an escapist medium, and I understand that. Simulation doesn't feel escapist, at least not to me.
I have a little bit different take on it. I used to, if you go back into the Scoop archives, I'm sure I've talked about this before, the way that I used to play sports games is I would buy one every, you know, 3 or 5 years. Like, I'm not the world's biggest American football fan, but I would buy Madden, you know, and play it, and that would be it for like 3 years, and then maybe I would buy Madden again. I would do that with FIFA as well. And I eventually had to stop because those games, they build on themselves in such a way that, like, man, if you look at, like, the controller in FIFA, like, what you need to do, like, every button has, like, 4 or 5 functions depending on which trigger you hold down. And, like, it's easy to see how they got in this situation because every year has to have a new thing. And they're like, look, now when you press the right stick, you know, you can do ball jukes and stuff. And now when you push the left stick, you can stick arm people and, like, they stiff arm people. And they add, like, it's one little thing every year, and by the time it's 5 or 6 years, it's incomprehensible, and there's a million modes, and do you want to be the manager or the coach or the player?
I think there's a lot of legitimacy to what you're saying there, Justin, but I've also heard exactly the same arguments made, say, about first-person shooters.
I mean, Call of Duty absolutely has that problem. I played Black Ops 3 after not playing a Call of Duty since Black Ops 2, and I didn't understand what the fuck I was doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why I can't play it. Like, I bought FIFA South Africa, whenever the South Africa World Cup was. I bought that one, and I'm like, I don't even know, like, how to play the game. Like, which of these menu options is for me? Like, and for some people, that's like such a wealth of content that if you buy FIFA every year, it's dope as hell. But like,
it's like the same reason I don't play Gran Turismo or Forza, but I will play Mario Kart. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I want something that not necessarily is simplified, but something that's just a little quicker to get into. I know there's like quick play matches and stuff like that in all these sports games, but a lot of it gets into, it feels almost like too human to me. Like, it's just like I get
the game too human?
Not that, God. By Silicon Knights. No, but like showing up and all of a sudden I'm playing an NBA basketball game and everyone in the game is a real human being and they're playing like just like some rap album I might have on Spotify and there's no escapism to it. Like, it's just, and the menus are emulating SportsCenter.
Well, you're also if you're like a basketball fan, you're also spending a lot of your time just watching real basketball.
Yeah.
So you're not escaping that.
Exactly. But and then you're trying to match your team to real life trades and stuff like that.
But for sports fans, a lot of sports are escapism. I've been playing in the same fantasy football league for over a decade now. And it is an escapist nature. It's a meta game within a game. And for a lot of people just watching that sport, that is the way they get out, following it, whether it be, you know, in baseball, a lot of people just follow stats and it's a way to get away from their lives and focus on something else, the same way we use games. And I can say that every time in the last few years I've made an effort to get back into something, for example, Forza or The Show or Madden, it's been worth the effort. That curve has been high because the game's become complex. But if I stay involved with other people who are playing at the same time, and that's been the key, people that can say, hey, here's what you're doing wrong, hey, here's what's changed in Forza, then it has proved worth it, and I've had a great time after that initial couple hours frustration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm not like, I totally agree with that. I'm not denouncing why they exist or who they service.
I don't think you are.
But I specifically can say, like, when it comes to video games as a medium, like, I would rather, it's the same reason I'd rather watch movies than documentaries. You know, like, mm-hmm. documentaries are interesting and they're fascinating, but it's just like, oh, this is the thing that's actually happening in real life. That's cool.
It's really depressing. Well,
it's also really depressing.
Back to Hyperlight Drifter.
Exactly.
And
you know?
There's something else here we haven't talked about at all, and that's the fact that the coverage of sports games has not just narrowed stylistically from things that were a little less realistic, like Blades of Steel or Punch-Out, but it's also narrowed in the marketing and the franchising and finally who owns the important properties.
Well, that's the thing. EA monopolized the conversation.
Exactly, and that's frustrating. There's no more competition out there, which means they are only pushing themselves. Mm-hmm. And that is a squish, I believe, on innovation mm-hmm. that frustrates me. There's not a lot of variety out there in major sports games anymore.
We started the show talking about, what, like four different first-person shooters and how they're taking to places. Some have mechs, some have jetpacks and Sarlacc pits.
Yeah.
Some are taking place in the far future. One might take place in the past. Like, that's a fascinating conversation, but looking at sports games, it's just sort of like, oh, EA renewed the Madden franchise again for another 10 years. And, there's not really much to say there.
It's an old man scoop moment here, but I mean, there once upon a time, young'uns who are watching, you know, you could play multiple franchises based on the NFL.
Yeah.
They
NFL
were all different.
Was dope.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
But I loved, like, ice hockey on the NES because you had to pick between fat, medium, and skinny characters, and like that was your strategy.
Much like reality.
It's the weird thing, like, you know, I'm not a sports fan, so that's why, that's the main reason why I don't play sports games today. But as a kid, I would play any sports game.
Yeah.
I play RBI baseball, I play Kings of the Beach for volleyball, I play Tecmo Bowl, NES Play Action Football.
Oh,
I would play any sports game.
Well, they were just goofier and a little more fun and a little less like rigid and serious. And now they're so much more based on simulation and reality.
Yeah, they were arcade inspired. I mean, games were still moving from the arcade into the living room. Having the arcade experience in your home, that was the ultimate game. And those games were made concessions for the fact they were home games because you could play all 9 innings or all 60 minutes, but they still played like arcade games. Nobody ever has gotten it more right than Tecmo Super Bowl. It exists at the perfect nexus of accessibility and simulation, and I just want it to happen again.
What was that robot football game in arcades?
Robot football game?
What's it? That was top down. Not might have been an Atari game.
There's Pigskin. There's Mutant League. There's I know the one you're talking about.
That robot baseball game.
No, it's top down and it's like vertical, right?
Yeah.
I do not remember the name of that thing, but I know the game you're talking about.
I'm gonna look up. No, I want one of the listeners or viewers to let me know.
Hopefully, it's not the answer to 20 questions.
It's not. Next email comes from Justin in Lawrence, Kansas.
Is that you?
It's not me.
You're from Iowa.
I'm almost sure it's not me.
Okay.
You padding the show with some.
Yeah. Why is Justin so handsome? With recent successes like Stardew Valley. Oh, it is Justin. Hyperlight Drifter, Pony Island, and Undertale. Is Valve.
As a father.
Yeah. Is Valve missing an opportunity to create a low cost, low spec, indie Steam machine? The Steam Link doesn't quite fit the bill for me. I'd like a dedicated system with a small footprint that doesn't require me to stream. The Steam Link is like the Vita TV or PlayStation TV
right.
Stream your games to your TV.
Yeah.
He says the PSTV seemed like a possible candidate, but Sony blew it, and the Ouya, rest in peace, tried to provide the hardware first in hopes that a robust marketplace would follow.
Yeah.
Steam has the developers, the storefront, and the desire to create hardware. Should they add this kind of device to their roster?
No, because they don't want to fragment their market, even though I love these games and I play a lot of them. The fact is they'll run on a piece of crap toaster anyway. That you can buy, so why design specialized hardware for it that might just split their marketplace?
So the idea, what if it wasn't even made by Valve? Do you like the idea of a low-cost, low-spec indie console.
Well, that exists. I mean, the Raspberry Pi is a thing that exists, and it's literally just a little board that's the size of a playing card that costs $25 or $30, and it can. I don't know its power level to, you know, run even something like Pony Island, but it can run like a SNES emulator.
It's pretty robust. I have
that's
one.
That's what I mean. Like and, I have one too. And you know, if you put a case on that and maybe made it slightly beefier, then you have, you know, a $50-$60 reasonably priced PC. But I also don't think Valve should do it, well, for a couple reasons. I mean, business-wise, why, you know? I mean, they make millions and millions of dollars off Steam without even mucking around with that. So it's like, there's an opportunity cost. Like, every person that works on that project is not working on a project like Steam Trading Cards that might make them more money.
Yep. Well, I mean, there's value to an entry-level $100 Steam machine, I guess, right?
I think it's a trap to say, well, okay, if we made it $120, then it could have Wi-Fi, and people wouldn't have to have an Ethernet.
Right, yeah, connection. It's a slippery slope.
And if we made it, like, $150, then we can include more RAM, and then all these other, you know, games would be able to run on it. And, like, man, if it was $200, then suddenly you're at, like, Xbox 360. 60 power levels, and it could run Skyrim, and it's like
you're also you'd have to create a specified UI that was slotted in the way that it would only show you stuff that could run on your console. So you would never get an ad for the new Assassin's Creed game because you'd be sitting there being like, oh shucks.
Now I liked the Ouya. If I remember correctly, I
just got
it.
Rid of my Ouya.
Did you?
How'd you do that? Did you like sell it or just throw it out?
We took it to Goodwill. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wrote it off my taxes.
I would be totally okay with a device like this existing, but I don't think it would come from Valve because they wouldn't want to split their market up. But yeah, somebody will probably take another shot at low-cost Android-based hardware. Again, a Chromebook is effectively what you're talking about.
It doesn't
about
have to. Why?
And
it wouldn't. Yeah. It can't be Android-based though, because then that's not PC.
Well, it's not. Okay, like now we're talking
Linux,
about hardware-based.
It need
software.
To be Linux-based.
Yeah, well, Android is Linux.
Well, yeah, but it doesn't run. It doesn't. Yes, but that's not what I mean.
Okay, I'm confused now.
Like the Steam Linux store, like if you're in Android, you can't boot that up and buy games.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we're talking, okay, now again, I'm saying stay away from Valve, stay away from Steam entirely. Oh. I'm talking about a dedicated, Damon said earlier, what if it weren't Valve? That's what I was
saying. I mean, isn't this basically just, isn't it basically just your phone to an extent? I mean,
yeah, but
phones
are
expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
not low cost.
Well, I mean,
it's not really low spec anymore either.
No, it's not low spec, but it is low cost if you consider what it's doing for you. I mean, it's basically getting a free game console with a phone or a camera or all the other things that you would buy that you would fold into it.
Yeah. Look into the, who was the question, the sender?
Justin.
Justin.
They should look into the Raspberry Pi. That's pretty dope.
Yeah, it is really neat. I agree with Justin there.
All right. Justin, you have 3 minutes to guess this week's game 20 questions.
Should we do a speed round?
Sure, make it a speed round.
Okay.
Our suggestion this week comes from Fernando in Portland, Oregon.
Okay, does your character in the game ever eat food? Do they eat things?
That's your first question?
Yes.
No.
Okay, okay. Was this game released after January 1st, 2000?
Yes.
Is this a console game?
Yes.
Before January 1st, 2000. Was this released?
Oh, wait.
After, I said.
Oh, yeah. After. Okay, did this game get a physical release?
Yes.
Was this game released on what we'd identified as the last generation of consoles?
Which would be 360, PS3,
yeah.
Wii, yes.
Yeah.
Was this game multi-platform?
No.
Okay. Was this game exclusive to Xbox?
No.
Was this game exclusive to Wii?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Wii game. Got it.
All right. But the character doesn't eat.
That's not Mario. Because I assume he eats the mushrooms.
Yeah, I assume so too. Yeah, I think that's fair. What else are you going to do?
Yeah, wait, does he like rub it on his skin? Yeah.
There's only a few other orifices he can stuff it in.
I'm so big!
And it's not Yoshi.
So yeah, because he also eats stuff. Okay.
Yep.
Let's. Is this a first party?
Good question.
Yes.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Physically released first.
Do we ask about multiplayer?
No.
Is there a multiplayer component?
Yes. That's 10.
Ooh, 10 multiplayer component.
Multiplayer Wii game made by Nintendo.
Are you riding around in a cart?
No.
Are you playing as Kirby?
No.
I'm thinking it's either
Mario Party
or Wii Sports.
Wii Sports.
Wii Fit.
It's probably Wii Sports.
Wii Play.
Do you play as a Mii? We could ask that.
Go for it.
Do we play as a Mii?
Yes.
All right.
So do you play a variety of fun sports mini games?
Yes.
Is this a sequel?
No.
Would this be Wii Sports?
Yes.
How many questions for that?
16.
All right.
Yeah, all right.
I didn't want to get hosed by it being Wii Sports Resort.
Yeah, well done. Yeah. Although that did have that really fun sword fighting game.
It's always interesting, this game, because it's like it took us 16 questions to get to one of the most like recognizable, best-selling games.
Best-selling games of all time.
The most important launch title since Super Mario Brothers.
Oh yeah, for sure.
What was the name of the accessory you needed for Wii Sports Resort?
Wii Motion Plus.
Yeah. The Waggle Wand.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. I love the Wii.
Love it?
Yep, absolutely love it.
Who doesn't?
Adore Wii. Vince hates the Wii.
Vince is a big old jerk.
Yeah.
I love some games on the Wii. I do not love the console or its controllers.
No? Really? I adore that sucker.
It's a very difficult system to go back to. I found that
it takes
a lot
of setup.
Yeah, I can go back to almost any. Actually, the GameCube is actually a little hard on the eyes. Mm-hmm. Like going back to that level of 3D games that have that sort of smear over them.
Well, again, it looks so much better on a CRT. That's the problem. It wasn't made for HD. Wii wasn't really made with HDTVs in mind. That's part of the problem. But,
all right, that's all the scoops we have for this week. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Jared. Thank you, Brian. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address at gamescoop@ign.com. If you are going to PAX East, we'll see you there. My name is Damon. This is IGN GameScoop. And we're out.
You're dancing.
Away from the light, out of options, out of sight. Let them in, let them see, just a version nearly free. In your bedroom when the day is done, you belong to everyone. Let it happen, let them be.
Stranger, I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.